Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. We remember when there's danger, the trickster, liberating trickster within and without quickens and rises to the occasion. So let's take the cult out of culture. It is lunar Lammas. It is exact mid-season right now, the sun at 15 plus Leo. It's one of the four cross-quarter holidays, Halloween, Candlemas, Beltane, Lammas, that we round off. But it's when the sun is exactly mid-season, which it is today. And it was thought of as a time when power was especially eager to be invited into the world to illuminate what has been hidden. What a good idea. So it's not only Lammas, it's a waxing full moon that will be full Friday into Saturday evening, 12:55 a.m. Pacific time, Saturday night. And that's also Leo Aquarius illumination. And for bonus points, Mercury is stationing on August 11th to go direct, again, revelatory, and that's the anniversary, August 10th and 11th of Epstein's death. We go, okay. So here we are. Jeffrey Epstein's death, August 10th, 11th, right on that cusp. So there's a lot to magic with together here that we all need to, let magic together team, everything be revealed that we need to know to have a democracy. So more than perfectly welcoming longtime buddy Eddie Nix, the return of Eddie Nix, who plays a bookseller in real life, an incredible bookseller. And hello to Viroqua, Wisconsin, a hotbed of entheo-animism. And Eddie has many projects operating in the dream world. Yes. He is founder and operator of Driftless Books and Music in Viroqua, Wisconsin, worth a pilgrimage, was a founding teacher at Youth Initiative High School, and has a radio show on community station WDRT. Yes, all praise to them every Sunday. He identifies as a rhizome or a verb, depending on circumstances. He has been many other things also. Welcome, Eddie.
Oh, Caroline, lovely to talk to you again and to all your listeners out there in the universe.
Yes, so we have a lot to address, but I wanted to first play something from Dana House, which is a Texas farm food report on the state of America's food system. So here we go with this, just to lead us in.
It's Joe from Georgia, so this is news out of Texas. But folks, these are alarm bells ringing for the entire United States. And our government is not listening. Overnight, multiple farms in the state of Texas completely shut down. And the reason for this shutdown was because they have lost almost 100% of their workforce. Now, we know this is the result of the immigration raids and stricter enforcement, but the ripple effect is going to be felt all the way across this country. Now, you've got crops that are rotting in the fields. You have livestock that is not being attended to at all. And that takes a lot of personnel. And we're talking, so now we're getting every area of food to include meat. And the communities that surround these farms, those businesses and those people who depend on the income from these farms, it's creating disasters for small communities in Texas. Now, this is not stopping at Texas farms. This is going to end up all the way across America, especially in the breadbasket, the middle of the nation, because they have tons of immigrant help. But folks, the alarm bells are ringing. Your food on your plate is being affected. So you got to think about it. It won't be soon until either prices go ridiculously high, or you just won't have any food to buy.
Well, there we have that, and let me toss it to you, Eddie, because we have as the devolutionary nadir of our rogue species seems to be in charge of leadership. There's food rotting here, as he says, in the fields. There's food rotting on the border of Gaza. There's food rotting outside Sudan, which has been in a stage five famine for a year as well. There's food rotting in warehouses when AID was canceled. It's like what a terrible species, right? I mean, to have food that it's wasting, and that's part of Jupiter, the story in Cancer. It's transiting America's sun. Time for a new story, you know, and a new blessing, you know, that everyone be safe and well fed. But it does enhance what Viroqua and yourself, you know, have been dedicated to, which is local food systems, right?
Yeah, so much. It rings of that, you know. It just made me think of the expulsion from the garden myth that we're all still recovering from also. And it seems like, you know, every day we get expelled a little more from the garden, you know, whether it's the garden that used to be outside the family house, or the family farm that gets turned into, you know, a corporate farm. And that's where this is going to strike, I think, worse, you know, and maybe it's for the good. But these huge corporate farms, you know, that are sort of subjugating these animals and the plants, really, to sort of this bizarre biotech world, you know, their time can't be very long. And I think that it really speaks to local food, where the food deserts are and how we're addressing them in our country. And in places like Gaza, as you said, where we're watching every night, more and more children and people die simply because they don't have food, not to mention the overwhelming genocide that's taking place around them and to them. But it really brings to mind, you know, the importance of the reverence of food. And somehow, in everybody's journey, food is a part of it. Whether you've mastered it as a child and it's your strength as you go into the world, or you're thrown into a situation where you suddenly have to learn how to, you know, cook ramen noodles at the age of 19 when you're in college. I mean, how we deal with that is so critically important, not only to ourselves, obviously, but to the world. Because if we're buying from our neighbors, who are small-time farmers, and we're living in a community that supports that, we're going to be much healthier overall than if we're dealing with, you know, corporate Cisco truck food every day, whether it's, you know, the fast food or the grocery store sort of fast food aisle. Ah, yes, food.
Yeah. So we can put, you know, a principle on the table, which is cruelty creates famine. The cruelty to the people who farm, who pick our crops, you know, we would be nothing without them. The cruelty, you know, in Gaza, the cruelty in Sudan. So cruelty creates famine. And in Arab culture, if you have food and your neighbor starves, you are guilty and prosecuted for murder. It's like, yeah. When you mention expulsion from the garden, yeah, one of the themes that we'll be playing with this hour is whose movie, whose story are we in? And I love a native friend that I met at Hollyhock in British Columbia, and she was talking about going over to, I've forgotten which African country, I can't remember, but where she was teaching the villagers their own lore about, you know, planting food and local. And there was an Episcopalian priest there, and she said, now let me get this straight. In your story, you get kicked out of the garden, right? He goes, right. In our story, we never left. So let me help you remember the garden. And I wanted to put that into your appropriate homage. I go, right. So, yeah, and then, you know, whose movie are we in? Whose movie are we in? Okay, so food, what movie do we want to be in? America just had its Jupiter return. Jupiter in the sky is on top of where the sun was when this country was founded. So what would be our blessing, you know, for the new story, the new old story for this country? And then, you know, I was telling you the story about Wernher von Braun, and you already knew it. You already knew it, you wise Eddie Nix rascal. So I'll just say it, and you can you know, chime in. But it was astounding. So I've been telling everybody I know so far, but here we go. So And we're going to hear the song Werner von Braun one more time from Tom Lehrer because it's really humming. So Werner von Braun was, you know, Nazi rocket scientist who used concentration camp slave labor to build rockets. And after World War II, America was like, you're our kind of guy. Here, come, we'll install you in Alabama, and you will be the godfather of NASA. And Werner von Braun is obsessed with going to Mars, And he writes a science fiction novel, Project Mars, and Elon Musk's grandfather and father read it. And the novel is about, oh, we've got to go to Mars because the Earth will be dead soon. Democracy, to hell with it. Technocracy, yes. And on Mars, there's a dictator whose title is the Elon. And so Elon's father decides to name his son Elon. And the delusional, immature, uninitiated Mars, you know, fantasy of going to Mars is still there. And of course, as we know, Mars pretty inhospitable to humans as we know them. Minus 220 degrees at night, blood boils during the day. So that's why the Peter Thiel, I mean, they're serious about this, right? Peter Thiel and Elon Musk, they want to create cyborg humans who could live on Mars. Because as Elon Musk believes, raised on science fiction novels about the engineer who does this, right? Earth will be dead due to what Elon says, malevolent AI and climate crisis. And so we have to build these colonies. We have to go back to the moon. We have to build structures there. I'm like, ask the moon about that. We have to build structures on Mars. We have to militarize space. So you already knew this story, Eddie Nix, right?
Yeah, well, if you think it's difficult to grow food on planet Earth, just wait until we get to Mars, right?
Right.
Yeah, it's such a weird storyline. And I think, you know, as we approach this, you said, thanks for being my dance partner today. And I love that, rather than a guest or somebody who brings some, you know, because you've done some crazy moves here in your little monologue there. And right. So, Elon Musk, and that it's all true. Werner von Braun is a fascinating character, wrote some really interesting books on early, you know, aeronautics and rocketry and, going to Mars. It was his, and he was one of the people who founded NASA. It's a little bit crazy, but it was part of this larger operation, Operation Paperclip, which brought in hundreds of Nazi scientists across the realm. And they took over abandoned military bases that weren't being used for the war and developed rockets. And yeah, eventually, you know, he sort of was able to fulfill his dream of going to, you know, at least the moon, if we believe that narrative. And he was a big part of NASA. And when it comes to Musk, you know, and that movie that we seem to have to always, you know, wake up to, oh, why am I in this movie again? You know, has at its core this weird sort of philosophy that's called the Dark Enlightenment. And I don't know, I sent you some links months ago about this, but it's a weird sort of Silicon Valley philosophy based on a guy named Yarvin who published, you know, sort of a manifesto about this. And it's all about monarchism and ultra-capitalist city states and, you know, vying for their citizens. And it's a neo-reactionary movement, basically, you know, where they want to pump up capitalism to the point where it's the only, you know, legitimate game on the block, not that it isn't already, but where there's no way out. And, you know, when you talk about Mars, it makes me think, like, they could pull off that whole thing simply by, you know, giving you the brain chip and having you sit in your chair every day and your avatar is up on Mars. And whether it's on Mars or in some, you know, AI, it doesn't really matter, does it? You're playing the game. And I think this whole, you know, distraction of Mars, even though I think it's a wonderful cultural psyche sort of thing, you know, we've written, you know, since the 40s, we've written sci-fi novels about Mars. And it's like the sort of cultural thing to grab onto when we think of space. And yet, you know, as you stated, it's quite an inhospitable place. And, you know, to colonize Mars, as you were talking about backstage, necessitates the idea that, yeah, climate change and AI are going to screw us up and the planet's, you know, on its last legs and we got to get out of here. I don't think that's the healthiest move, you know, for a species that has brought all this, you know, destruction upon its planet.
And it needs to learn to undo it. Yeah, well, I just want to distill some guiding principles that, yeah, as you referenced and we brought up backstage, you know, so then the fundamentalists, you know, are all up for, you know, it's all going to die and there'll be the rapture. And it's like, I don't think we want to outsource leadership to people invested in the earth and everyone and everything dying except for those few chosen people. It's like, that's a bad storyline.
Outsource it to a storyline that's bankrupt, yeah. Like, you know, end of the world, apocalypse, you know, like whether it's Israel or the new Israel or the old Israel, you know, going up in smoke and the heavenly king. Do we really want that as our overriding paradigm of the storyline we live with? You know, our myth, our religion, our culture. It just seems like such a bummer to wait for. You know what I mean? Even if it means, you know, getting to the pearly gates before the next guy.
Yes. So no, well, that's why you're here, Eddie Nix, and we're all here too. Which is that, you know, this is participatory news. Participatory news. We go, if we entertain the possibility that this really right now, just, you know, tapping into our ancestral lineage, this is exact mid-season Lammas, sun at 15 plus Leo, which was celebrated with, you know, the harvest and bonfires and, you know, honoring and inviting in the magic power of summer and being grateful, these rituals. And it sort of says the rituals live in us. It's like, create sacred bonfires or have arson. Take your pick, right? Let's play with that thing. And So it's opportune. People honored, you know, for thousands of years, the cross-quarter holidays like today, as much as the solstices and equinoxes. They were quite important. So there's that available going, would you like to invite in anything? You know, and then it is a full moon Leo Aquarius, which is all about the creative uniqueness of the individual, you know, and its relationship to community, right? And we go, right, taking the cult out of culture. We want community that welcomes the unique creativity of the individual rather than suppresses it, right? And so that's part of the guiding of this full moon. Although, you know, there's the disaster part too, which is full moons just bring up everything, right? But so especially let us participate. I love how the previous show, Richard Walensky's show, with guest Robert McFarlane ended because he was going through many terrible things. But then he said, Robert McFarlane said, think of the Klamath River, you know, and it was because people envisioned, and people said, that's crazy, that's never going to happen, but they envisioned the dams being moved, removed. And it was true, and the river running free, and right. So that's also part of our skill set that is reporting in our dedicated imagination to see the desirable. To see the desirable revelation, to see the rivers running free, to see these impossible things. And it says, yeah, that seems a worthy, important, good idea. And you can go, as you know, this is a democratic anarchist show. You can go anywhere you want, Eddie Nix, and that's right, our dance partner, radio dance partner. But I did want to also bring up, you know, Epstein. And, you know, there was, I can post it in my Patreon Visionary Activist show realm. There was an interview, a credible show, with a partly credible guest who was a former Israeli intelligence guy, but was connecting Epstein to Gaza and saying Epstein was part of Israeli intelligence blackmail asset. So he had dirt on everybody. And what this narrator was saying, and I was with him, you know, until partway through, he's like, and I really like Trump. I'm like, well, I'm just gonna. But he said, part of Trump's obedient servitude to Netanyahu is because there's so much more dirt that Jeffrey Epstein gave to Israeli intelligence about everybody, but including Trump. And this narrator, we can wonder together, said, you know, I like Trump, he said. and it's like, well, what could be revealed that we don't really know already? You know, that Trump raped 13-year-old girls, we know that. And other horrible things, and the money, the you know, 4,500 wire transfers of $1.5 billion, you know, through one bank. It's all coming out, right? So it's like everything come out. You know, so the narrator was saying, well, Trump, just disobey. You know, you could bring food to Gaza tomorrow for breakfast. You know, you could do that. Just disobey. You know, if there's any part of you. Anyway, so that was his narrative. But I thought it was worthy of wonder. And then Max Blumenthal, again, all kinds of narrators here, but we want to go into Donald Barr and Bill Barr, and I'm going to hand it to you for the, and the science fiction book. Okay, there. So Epstein, not a distraction. It's like where do you pull the strand that ties to everything, right? The billionaires, the corruption, the long, kinky, anything anywhere is everywhere. The kinky, you know, abuse of young girls sexually in many religions, you know, many religions, anything anywhere is everywhere, but it's especially visible now. But you have a lot to say about Epstein and Donald Barr and Bill Barr and their science fiction book.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, I will admit that I am a explorer of conspiracies from when I was a kid. And yeah. When the whole Epstein thing came up, you know, I was quite taken by the enormity of it, you know. And on the general level, I'll recommend to your listeners and to you a young woman named Whitney Webb, who is reporting on this and has written a couple books, one called One Nation Under Blackmail in two volumes, in which she goes through the Epstein thing with just a fine-tooth comb, and not just the sex stuff. And, you know, not to demean that at all, because that is just a horrendous sort of thing that is so deep in our society and in our culture and among the ruling elite, if you believe, you know, it's like, but more the financial side of it, you know, him from a young protege of Donald Barr, who is, you know, of course, William Barr's father, who Donald Barr was an OSS agent, Office of Strategic Services, the forerunner of the CIA, and landed in a couple cushy, you know, administration jobs at some high schools, including the Dalton School, where he hired Jeffrey Epstein, who had dropped out of college a few times and gone off the radar and God knows what he was doing, but was allowed to teach at this boys' school in New York, quite a prestigious place, where he met this Kat Greenberg, who ran one of the big investment companies and tutored his son, and ended up working for Greenberg at Bear Stearns. You know, so the whole thing, he was involved with weird money from, you know, basically the late 70s up until his arrest. Weird money meaning the money that is black, you know, the things that funded Iran-Contra. He was, you know, with Robert Maxwell and Anand Khashoggi doing those armed trade deals, you know, that were behind the scenes between Israel and Iran when we weren't supposed to be selling Iran. You know, so everybody's making cuts and cuts. And to be the guy who says, I'm only dealing with billionaires, I mean, should set off a few triggers. I think, you know, his financial crimes, if those were actually, you know, uprooted and shown the light of day, would, you know, that's the kind of thing that would topple governments. But I think we'll be forever distracted with, you know, how young the girls were in his Manhattan apartment, unfortunately. Donald Barr, during the time that Epstein was there, or shortly after, and before he quit, like around 78, I think, wrote this science fiction novel called Space Relations. And relations, yes, in the term of sexuality. It was sort of about interplanetary sex trafficking of children and others. And, you know, some wonderful American, you know, patriot goes out to this star system and discovers this planet of debauchery and polyandry and, you know, sex trafficking and the rest, and, you know, makes it a monogamous culture in the end, or that's his goal. Anyway, it was kind of a love letter to Epstein, if you look at it in the context of of historically. And just as a side note, since I'm like really just a book dealer who knows a lot of weird things, when Epstein thing first came out, you know, I bought a bunch of the copies of this book because they were still $4 or $5 and you could pick them up. Now the cheapest copy is like $400 online. You know, so there's interest in this, even if it's just a weird periphery sci-fi novel based on this larger, you know, deep dive conspiracy theory. It's fascinating how both those novels, the Werner Brown novel, Project Mars, and Space Relations, you know, continue to be talked about to this day as sort of weird founding memes in relation to the movie we're living in.
Yes, the movie, the story, the uninitiated Mars science fiction novel that is all around us, that it's good to see, everybody. It's good to see that. So, yeah, so Donald Barr writes the sci-fi books, Special Relations? Sorry, say it again. Secret Relations.
Space Relations.
Right. And then, of course, his son is Bill Barr. So ever since, you know, August 10th of 2019, I've been saying, you know, Jeffrey Epstein died of Epstein-Barr disease, right, because Bill Barr was the attorney general at that time, right?
Exactly, and Bill Barr was a huge figure in Iran-Contra and running with guns and drugs during all that. So, you know, you add in the drug money to the Epstein, you know, totals, and you're going, oh, wow, yeah, I could see how he could be the guy to run billions of dollars, you know, through the dark channels of what was then the beginning of electronic, you know, sort of money.
And we
and
just bring in
like Peter Thiel and Elon Musk developing PayPal and wanting it to be half of the banking system in the end, you know, and, you know, this whole social credit currency, you know, whatever it is that they're going to be shoving down our throats with centralized digital currencies and such. You know, it's all right there. The plans have been laid, you know, the papers have been done, the role-playing exercises at the big multi-governmental organizations have happened. It's just a matter of, you know, the right shoe falling and us, you know, falling for that bait, you know.
So
there's a lot of fishing around here, so I always come back to fishing metaphors.
Right. So yes, yeah, so to a wonderful board up, we will play the Werner von Braun song, Tom Lehrer's, after the break. We'll keep that theme going, you know, and in a few minutes we'll have our really good break music as well. It's a richness here. We want to pour forth everything. So, yeah, that's fascinating. And then a friend of mine associated with Pacifica was in Chinese language class with Bill Barr, who was studying just to put this on the table of like really seriously studying Chinese language for some years. So we go, yeah, well, there's that involved there too. So there's a lot of play we want to get to. No, we're glad you're a great sleuth and a detective and creatively suspicious, and as you are in Eighth House Pisces with Leo rising, charisma and deep delving. No, we love this part of you and your Moon and Neptune and Scorpio deep delving, and then you're born with the Jupiter Uranus conjunction right on Bernie Sanders and Alexandria Ocasio's Mercury 2+ Libra, which is dawn of a new day reveals everything changed, and so it's like so you do have a chipper heart underneath all of your deep delving, yeah?
Yeah, it's true. You know, I think I'm a utopian romantic really in the end.
Yes.
Because I love this idea, you know, and it's really simple. It's like if we just cooperate and not compete, we can work out all this shit.
Right.
All these things.
Right.
It's so very simple. And I think looking at cooperatives, you know, because we can talk about how bad it is all day, and that's, you know, fun, but it's not really helpful to the mental,
right.
You know, and solutions. What are the solutions? You know, solutions are like eating dinner with people you don't eat dinner with, you know, sharing food, making food, you know, creating art together, just simply associating together without the capitalist system standing in between you, you know, unmediated. And I think so. I love those kind of solutions. I know you got to go to break, and Yeah, I'll leave it at that.
No, that's right. Don't go anywhere, Eddie Nix, or everybody else too. We have a rich feast of quirkitude, critique, and vision following after this break, which is Kieran, musician and company, and a pertinent song just like that. Here we go.
History lesson number one. There's not a thing that can't be done. Somewhere in this world of doubt, someone's gonna work it out. There you go. Just like that. We learn to crawl, we learn to walk. We learn to fly at Kitty Hawk. Next thing you know, one afternoon, we're driving golf balls on the moon. There you go. Just like that. We learn how to take our dreams and turn them into fine machines. There's one thing we haven't done. We haven't learned to live as one. We stand behind our border lines and talk about it all the time. History lesson number two. Not what you say, but what you do. There you go. Like that.
There we go. Just like that, that's Kieran. Our guest today is Eddie Nix. This is the Visionary Actors Show. I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey, and here we go, the after break part. Here we go. Right, that's a charming song, no, Eddie Nix, right?
It's a beautiful song. I love it.
Yeah. And again, just the jauntiness, addressing difficult, dark things with jauntiness is so crucial. And I love that you called yourself a utopian romantic, a fully informed and, you know, utopian romantic. And we go, that is the deal, you know, to critique and bless, right? And so, you know, astrologers are all abuzz. Well, we all are, really. You know, there's what's called a grand trine in air and more than half of a hexagon in the sky. It's a beautiful pattern. But everything is tricky. Grand trines, you know, astrologers are like, oh, it's a fantastic 120 degree triangle. But I love another friend saying, you know, the medieval astrologers thought of it as a malefic, right? Just to play with it, it's kind of like greased lightning, you know, and so it's Mars, Mars, right? So we want to honor Mars. These boys want to go to Mars. It's like, no, no, no. You want to be positive, Mars, not go to Mars, you guys. Mars just entered Libra, the realm of Venus. It is trining Uranus, newly arrived in Gemini. So it's like we could have ingenuity wedded to desire. We could have social equality and ingenuity to support that wedded to desire, you know. Or we could have technology, you know, Palantir, and I mean those things that we'll come back to. And then both of them trine Pluto, so it's a grand trine in air. Looks plausible. And I know with people who have grand trines in their chart, it's like it's an inner, one of the ways the medievals thought of it. It's an inner potential. And it's that issue of, will I do it? Will I do what's within me? Will we do what we could? And so it takes some pressure, and we have that in each individual life, in our collective life, to some difficulty to compel one to do what's easy. And that's part of the dynamic. Mars is opposite Saturn, Neptune. We run into obstacles, but that increases our deeper dedication to envision the desirable. Just like Robert McFarlane was saying last show, you know, the impossibility of the Klamath Rivers being set free. No, impossible, but people saw it. They saw it, and they acted on it, and they saw it, and they acted on it, and it's true. And that comes to us now to dedicate to the desirable vision. And maybe... you know, the Saturn-Neptune says some things are always true, but there are times when they're truer, you know, and the power of dedicated vision. So over and over, maybe too many times, I've been saying that about the election, that we got smoked on our strong suit. The Elon Musk, the Trump people, the Steve Bannon, they, you know, have been visualizing tyranny, Elon Musk's grandfather, for generations. They, you know, Steve Bannon really gets up and imagines the world as he wants it to be pretty much every day. It's a Kabbalistic practice, you know, turned to up to no good. And we've been sort of whatever it is. So now, you know, Saturn Neptune says it's dangerous enough for us all, and radio's great this way too, you know, to focus on the desirable vision. You know, a clear mental image tends to materialize as an actual condition or event. And Uranus says, you wonder what synchronicity comes into play. So There's a lot going on. We can work with revelation. We can work with the new story, and that's why I was inviting you, and thank you for doing it, to look into the occult origins of anarchism, this wonderful book that we've often referenced. And are there things you want to bring up about the Freemasons, the radical movers and shakers, activism, animism, and anarchy?
Yeah. Perfect segue. That's such a great book that you gave me as homework to re-examine. And I read a few chapters just this afternoon. And, you know, I think we're still living under the same paradigm, the same question, like, as you stated, how do I get involved? What is my part in transforming this? And I think the people that this book discusses, well, throughout time, but certainly at the beginning of, let's call it the spiritual scientific sort of symbiotic point, where in the 17th century we have the choice to kind of go the alchemical route, or let's call it the Cartesian route, where everything's, you know, numbered and analyzed, and we chose that second route, obviously, but we're still grasping with the same questions. Erica, in that book, The Occult Roots of Anarchism, discusses Adam Weishaupt, who is, you know, as this legendary figure of the head of the Bavarian Illuminati, you know, which we want to trace all conspiracies back to, at least in modern time. And yes, it was a real thing. You know, the Illuminati was born of Freemasonry. Adam Weishaupt went to some lodges, enrolled in them, didn't like the sort of discourse, decided to make his own. It grew. But, you know, he was an anarchist at heart. You know, he said the fall from grace was our submission to the rules of government.
Oh, cool.
Right. He talked about the imminent revolution of the human spirit. And he was accused of Spinozaism, which, if you can imagine, it was quite bad at that time. And here's what they said, which is to say, that everything that exists is matter, that God and the universe are the same, and that all organized religion is a political deception devised by ambitious men.
Oh, that's so fun.
So I can identify, and I understand why Robert Anton Wilson could identify with this character and write a whole bunch of novels based on, you know, the weird conspiracies that have come from them. But I think we're all struggling for that same thing, you know, defining ourselves in relation to the state, defining ourselves in relation to technology now, which is a philosophical thing that we, you know, have always dealt with, but to the point where, you know, it's an addiction for your children at the age of three, where you know, it's pretty heavy. So I think with the dystopian visions that are abounding right now, I think I think we can look for inspiration to our forefathers and mothers who fought the same battles against the weaving looms, you know, the Ned Ludds of the world, and against the early technologies, which were obvious, just as obvious to those people, were going to displace sort of the, you know, whether it's industrial agriculture, you know, the idea that the most sacred thing that we have, food, has become just this abstract commodity that's not even natural anymore, you know, that. So, you know, yes, I do have hope, even though I tend to go with John Trudell's version of hope, which is hope is the heroine of the consciousness. You know, there's something to having the belief that things will be better, that you can make it better. But hope kind of signifies that, well, I'm going to just hope and put it over here in this box.
I go to the Bengtsons. Hope is not a feeling. Hope is an action. You know, and just it's like, yeah, so yeah, we can play with that. And then just we reach back for great anarchist ally Sir Herbert Reed, just put this important thing on our work table, who said, only those serving an apprenticeship to nature can be trusted with technology. And we go, all right, looks impossible, but impossible things are completely plausible and in fact more likely than not. And I'm just looking at, you know, the gods, the patterns are trying to help us out, you know, so it's not the question with any system or any divination of like what's going to happen, because that makes us passive, and whatever makes us passive is toxic. So it's not what's going to happen, but what's available with which to cooperate, you know, who brought what. And the planetary pattern says there's a lot. Everything into the cauldron. And as I've been saying every show, because every show it's true, Pluto stationing at the degree of, you know, a deserter from the military following their conscience, deserter from the military following their own wilderness path. And we go, let's animate that team. You know, come on, leave. You know, yes, quit anything that is a violation of your soul. You know, quit. You know, the, I mean, the Democratic, you know, they did the egregious moral flaw of not honoring, you know, Gaza and Palestinians is what made the black susceptible to the underestimated black magic and chicanery of the Dementors, right? And we go, right. So expediency, I think, we want to throw into the cauldron. It was an expedient call, like, if I do anything good for the Palestinians, I might lose the suburban Jewish voters in Pennsylvania. You lost anyway. You know, again, calculation of that kind is, you know, just into we don't have time for that. It's really the dedication. And what this beautiful language says is Saturn is our deepest dedication underneath everything, and our deepest vision underneath everything. And it's at the comedian degree, so, you know, keeping jauntiness as part of our repertoire. And Saturn's task in all of us is to delineate the desirable vision. Everything into Pluto's cauldron, and what shall we ladle out? And the backstage forces or gods or intelligences are like, you know, this could be, you know, again, well, let's go to, you know, David David Graeber, of course, who in his last words to us said, remember, humans, that human society has always had the capacity to transform from authoritarian to egalitarian in what would seem like a historic instant. And we go, right, thank you. Thank you, David Graeber, always educating still, even in death. And we go, right. So the planetary pattern suggests that and or, but that's why we want to be aware, because, you know, do you want to, well, I know I like keeping you on the upside, but Uranus and Gemini is all about communication and communication technology. It could be fantastically inventive right now, and we might even say that all technology is a crude literalization of intrinsic human capacity. We could be telepathic, you know, but do you want to give us any warning about Palantir?
Oh, yeah. You know, so Palantir, just sort of the cutting edge, the tip of the spear of this techno-dystopian future. If you think about what's happening in Gaza, which, you know, is should be able to be visualized, entire neighborhoods and cities just destroyed to the dust, right? This didn't just happen with one bomb. This happened with tens of thousands of targeted strikes that were all determined by an artificial intelligence that people like Palantir, whether it was exactly Palantir or whether the Israelis developed their own system based on some of that technology, they're targeting, you know, they have hundreds of targets on a daily basis that the computer gives them, based on the cell phone activity and the camera activity and what the intelligence knows and what the computer can learn about every person in this corralled little concentration camp. And they're sending out, it's not like a plane, you know, flying over and some pilot going, okay, I'm going to try to hit this. It's all technologically programmed, you know, so that's the end game, you know, and I think Gaza is just a test run of that. You know, how much will people stand up for that? How much will they allow to happen under their name? How much, you know, will they be able to sort of, you know, see on a daily basis? It's like watching, you know, videos on X now, you know, where it's just people beating up each other and, you know, racial, you know, fights and, you know, misogyny. And it's just like gross, like no matter what you ask for, you know. When I check into that, it's just so terribly depressing within 30 seconds, even though I don't like to use it. Palantir, Peter Thiel's, you know, master plan technology company, I think, you know, CIA cut out from the InQtel, you know, fund that was, you know, set up by the CIA to fund technological organizations that are developing this technology that we can use. Yeah, it's a dangerous slope, and I think it all ties in with this sort of dark enlightenment, which I talked about earlier. You know, this guy Yarvin and this idea of a capitalist monarchy that will, you know, is going to be more efficient state. You know, we're seeing it with the Doge stuff sold to the American people as, you know, we're going to clean up and find the corruption, and it's like, what came of any of that, you know, really in the end? So yeah, Palantir is something that we should definitely have on our radar.
And it's, you know, named after Tolkien, right? The Palantir in Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. You know, I mean, our collective unconscious is so similar to all these dark lords that, you know, we can easily define the storyline if we just pull a couple threads. You know, and these threads that you were giving us in terms of this book, The Occult Roots of Anarchism, which I think is just a great exploration of what became the division of the magical and the radical, let's just say, you know, the anarcho and the spiritual, right?
Yep.
And the syndicate does not exist anymore. You know, you're either a radical political person with no, you know, spirituality is not guiding you, and maybe you're a Quaker or something, but, or you're kind of in that spirituality.
There has been that separation, but I'd say one of the fundamental dedications of this show for 30 years on the radio, you know, and everywhere, and my cahooting in conferences and festivals, you know, is, yeah, so the radical and the political were falsely separated until now, humming, you know. You know, again, sometimes people seek me out at festivals and go, you know, we have our pagans here and our political activists here, and you speak to both about how it's one story, you know, come do that. And it is one story. And that's, you know, let's just play. you know, that this day, this full moon Friday night, this Mercury stationing, you know, revelatory, you know, on the eve of Jeffrey Epstein's death, you know, it's like, let's break the spell. Let's invite in what could break the spell and the rewedding of what's been falsely estranged. I mean, I grew up with entheogens and social action and left-wing analysis of everything, you know, and metaphysics all as one thing. I mean, the reason we practice metaphysics is to improve the world, right? And, you know, personal change, social change, ritual magic, and engaged action. So that's, you know, we look at all of our stories. When did our stories begin, you know, and we go, well, 1970 for me, you know, sitting around with an interesting salon, right, where we were all studying metaphysics and social action and entheogenically enhanced in a responsible way, the entheogens as allies to this sense. And what you're saying, that there was a woman reporting from the Sudan, I apologize for forgetting her name, but she was saying, you know, in Sudan, there was this yearning going, you know, they've been in stage five famine for over a year, and they go, if people only saw it, if people only knew it, you know, surely they would intervene. And then so they look at Gaza and they go, Gaza's been live streamed. People do see it. And it hasn't, you know, engaged, you know, compassionate, competent in action yet. You know, I'm going for now. I'm going for now, everyone, team. This is a turning point. You know, Terry Pratchett says magic is easy. You just find the fulcrum and push. And it's like, right, desert from the military, desert from anything that is against your conscience, you know, become available. And I like the planets, Uranus saying, I am your booking agent. You tell us what the desirable vision you want to ladle out of the cauldron of death and rebirth, and I'll do how. You know, this synchronicity, the inner dedication is really the antidote to depression. You know, what's the antidote to depression? And Saturn goes, deeper dedication. Depression, too shallow. Go deeper. You know, for everyone right now going, what is our deepest dedication? You know, and what would we like to see? You know, and there's a lot, and that's, you know, we know that, you know, even though 71% of the world's governments are authoritarian, not the people, not the animals, not the flora, fauna, fungi, right? And now we go to the anarcho, which is there is an intelligence of community rising in the midst of crisis, you know, that is very we, you know, because what the reporter from Sudan was saying is, you know, we haven't yet achieved herd empathy or kinship. Right, and that's what the beautiful break music, just like that, was about too. But to see that again, kinship, that there is no suffering, no anything in the world that we don't all experience in some form. So I'm going for the magic possibility of now. We're but yeah, no, you're a wonderful contributor, Eddie Nix, because you are fully informed and you're a utopian romantic. That's one thing to put on the table. As you know, let's have a cup of that. You know, fully informed and yet, you know, full of liberating stories and did you know and here's what we could do and let's do this. And so the idea for all of us, Jupiter is called exalted in Cancer, sign of providing nourishment. And it made sense to me once I found Scheherazade saying people need stories even more than they need bread. So it's for all of us to ladle out the desirable guiding story now. That's really in your psyche, right?
Well, I'm kind of a holder of stories as a bookseller, and
yes.
You know, you started off the whole thing talking about cults and taking the cult out of culture, and I think that's a great meme. Although cultus in Latin, you know, means to worship, so perhaps we need to cult back in culture and think about who we're worshiping and why we're worshiping. Is it the dollar? Is it the I, or is it the us, right? Is it the I or the we, right? I think that's like one of those, you know, every decision we make, we can go, is this for me or is this for us? Meaning everyone. And that'll differentiate, that'll answer so many questions. You know, form cults, you know, I mean, worship things that are crazy that you believe in if we don't have anything to worship. You know, these are not crazy ideas. They're ways of coping. They're ways of communing with people. We don't have ways of knocking on our neighbor's door and asking for a stick of butter anymore. You know, we don't want to get shot. We don't know who our neighbors are. You know, there's so many things that are right next door to us, literally. to enhance our lives and bring about that sense of community and cooperation instead of competition on a daily basis. That if we get enough of it, it's just like a nice homeopathic dose. And it'll bring us through that day and through that week.
Empathy, altruism is self-interest. You know, let's waft this out into the memosphere. You know, and yes, we didn't play Tom Lehrer's Wernher von Braun, but we played it last week, and it's available too. And so just play that, because we're going to use our last minutes here. I'm also looking at Epstein's death chart just for fun. Somewhere around 11:56. That's right. Okay, important news coming in. 11:56 p.m. Somewhere, and I finagled it and made it, you know, a few minutes past midnight, which would give Al Gall the fixed star of beheading rising in the east. Who knows? But right now, when Epstein died, 2+ Aquarius was overhead, deserted from the military. Maybe we don't know what his soul was doing. But Pluto's right there, which is, again, revealing from the underworld. And it's another theme, revealing from the underworld. The moon in Sagittarius in the eighth house. The dead can talk. The dead can talk. And they're getting ready. The dead are getting ready to talk. August 11th, just for fun. What would you like the dead to say, everybody? You know, participate in this way. But any other, you know, we got 1 minute. Let me give you the 1 minute. Anything you want to say, Eddie Nix, wonderful ally.
Oh, you know, I've been acquiring bookstores since we last talked, and there was three that came into our possession that were all sad stories of older people in their 70s and 80s who passed away who didn't have a plan. And, you know, dealing with those the dead speaking, you know, and the sort of morphogenic resonances in all these books of the people who own them and the people who possess them, and It's made me think that I think we need, as a culture, to start to go back to the idea of our ancestors and really thinking a lot about that in everything we do. You know, whether it's like, what is this thing I possess, or what is this action I'm about to take? You know, does it benefit those ancestors and elders? So, Caroline, thank you so much. It's always just a treat to dance with you.
Kirsten's adorable. She's playing Wernher von Braun as we exit. That's so wonderful. Thank you very much. You know, Kirsten Thomas, always so clever and wonderful. And thank you, Eddie Nix. I'm Caroline Casey. You can find Visionary Activist Show on Patreon, and we will reconvene next week. And here's Wernher singing us out. Here we go.
Don't say that he's hypocritical. Say rather that he's...